All right. Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the call-in talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. I'm here with my co-host, Ron Meniza.
Good morning.
If you'd like to participate in the conversation about natural medicine, you can call 860-486-9487. That's 860-486-9487. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcasts at whus.org. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at FranStorchND. All right. So I have a couple of topics I wanted to talk about today. The first one is I'm seeing so many people come in with colds, some people with the flu and the occasional GI bug, but I'm mostly seeing people with colds and people are coming into my office saying, oh, I had a cold and chest congestion last week, so I went to the doctor. And I'm kind of like, I'm the doctor.
Danger, danger.
So I'm like, and you didn't come to me, why? So I have to very kindly explain to my patients, listen, you can come see me. If you have a cold or a cough or something, you can come to see a naturopathic physician. We have a lot of things that can help. And the things that your docs give you are either they're going to make you feel better, but they are suppressive to your immune system. And if you get antibiotics when you don't really need them, you run the risk of antibiotic resistance. So there are definitely things that we can do. So first of all, let's talk about cold and flu prevention. I don't want to spend too much time on this because, I wind up talking about this a lot. But I just wanted to shout it out there because I'm definitely seeing a lot of people come in with coughs and colds and sinusitis and that kind of thing. So first of all, your basic cold and flu prevention. You want to be cleaning off the table. And I don't mean the literal table. I mean you want to be cleaning the source. That means washing your hands all the time. It's very easy to pick up a virus. I mean, that is basically how you pick up viruses. Somebody sneezes or coughs. Droplets come out of their nose and mouth, and they spray for many feet. They can spray as much as 10, 20 feet. And they land on surfaces, and they land on doorknobs, and they land on doorways. Doorknobs are a huge place for repositories for germs because why? Everybody touches the doorknob or the door pad if you're pushing on a door, right? The door handle. So doors are incredible. So it's really a good idea to wash your hands all the time. I mean, you don't want to get obsessive about it, but maybe you do want to get a little bit obsessive about it. So I've taken to keeping mini hand sanitizer bottles in all of my bags, in the car, in the pockets in the car, in the passenger side, and also in the driver's side, so that if I go into a store and I come out and I'm concerned that I touched something that had germs on it, I can sanitize my hands right then. Of course, when I'm at the office, I sanitize my hands before I touch every single patient. Sometimes during the course of a physical exam, I'll do it a couple of times. Like if I touch your feet, I'm not going to touch another part of you without sanitizing my hands again. Also, if I see that you're sick, after you go, I'm going to sanitize my hands again. All right. And so whether you sanitize your hands or wash them, it doesn't really matter. They both work. You want to spend, we used to say 15 seconds. Now we say 25 seconds. So sing the ABCs or happy birthday slowly. And so the point is, it's not as important whether you use soap and water or whether you use antimicrobial hand sanitizer. What's important is that you're scrubbing, and that scrubbing disrupts the cell membranes or the protein coats of viruses and the cell membranes of bacteria. So when you're disrupting them and you're getting them off your hands. So when you spend a lot of time scrubbing, that's going to be more likely to happen. So with hand washing, like whenever you go somewhere, when you're, one of the things I'll see a cashier at a store, then they're obviously sick. Either that, or I'll see somebody in line who is sick. And then a lot of stores now Have hand sanitizer at the doorways. So you can use hand sanitizer as you go in and you can use hand sanitizer as you're leaving. So if you walk into most supermarkets and health food stores, they've got a, well, if you're in the supermarket, they're going to have a Purell stand. And if you're at the health food store, they're going to have an EO stand. They're going to have hands, you know, holistically oriented hand sanitizer, usually lavender scented, which is very nice. So take advantage of those. That's a really good idea to do. And take it and spend your time scrubbing and be grateful that these people are just providing you with a nice service there. You can wash your hands with soap and water. Same thing. You want to scrub for 25 seconds or more. That's how you want to do it. And that hand washing can go a long way towards helping you. So the other thing for prevention, so these are like, we're talking at the basic level. You've been out in the environment and a virus has come in contact with you and it may be sitting there on a surface wanting to collect. The deal is that viruses, you pick up the viruses by touching them and then you touch your face and they get into your nose and throat and then they multiply inside your nose and inside your throat. Now, the neat thing about viruses is that viruses are, they're kind of wimpy. I mean, yes, they can be very powerful and make you sick, but they're wimpy in that it's hard for them to get around on their own. That viruses usually need something to carry them. They need droplets of water, which is what your mucous membranes are, and they also need bacteria. So it's normal for you to have a certain level of bacteria inside your nose. You have ambient bacteria. There are strep, you know, when you get a strep throat? Well, you have strep bacteria in you all the time. It's just that when they multiply, then they start to cause problems and your immune system starts to go after them and you get sick. But you have strep and staph bacteria in your body all the time. So those bacteria are easy carriers for the viruses. So if there's bacteria living in your nose a lot, then viruses are more likely to be able to be carried into your nose by droplets and then set up on bacteria and then multiply. So what happens if you kill the bacteria in your nose all the time? Well, guess what? That's where healthy nasal sprays come in. One of my favorite nasal sprays has a mixture of saline and xylitol in it. And we find that xylitol with your saline is more effective than saline alone. So when you're using xylitol, I don't know how much of it, I didn't see anything where I found that xylitol directly kills viruses. It does directly kill bacteria. And the other thing it does is it breaks up biofilm. So that's why xylitol is in your toothpaste and it's in your mouthwashes, because what's a really common biofilm? Plaque, that bacterial film that builds up in your mouth. The big bacteria that likes to build up in your mouth and cause cavities is Streptococcus mutans. And when it grows colonies, it can make this stuff called a biofilm. Biofilm is a protein coat that the bacteria surrounds itself with to make it more impervious to your immune system. And so xylitol breaks up that biofilm. That's why if you use xylitol mouthwash, which I've found some nice xylitol mouthwash that I've purchased, you can also just get xylitol powder in bulk and put it in a little bit of water and rinse your mouth that way. And if you want it to taste like peppermint, then you can get some peppermint essential oil and drop that in and make your own instant xylitol peppermint mouthwash. You don't necessarily have to get, you know, prepared mouthwash. On the other hand, I must say the prepared mouthwash is convenient and may have other ingredients in it like aloe and tea tree oil and some other things that are nice and antimicrobial. It is very convenient and you can take it with you. It's made up. If you're traveling, it's good to have on hand. And you don't have to put anything together. It's all in one. I found a nice xylitol mouth rinse that has calcium in it so that the calcium can help to re-enamelize your teeth. So those are nice too. So I'll take that xylitol mouthwash and I'll use it as a mouthwash, as a mouth rinse. And it does provide enamel, you know, calcium to rebuild your teeth, but it also has xylitol in it. So I'll rinse my mouth. I'll hold it in my mouth for a minute and then I'll gargle with it. And then the xylitol is going to get the back of my throat. So what I like to do is use a neti pot first. So if cleaning your nose can happen with a neti pot, and you can use a neti pot with just saline, you can put a half a teaspoon of salt in it, and you can add a pinch of xylitol as well to your neti pot, and then you can use your neti pot that way. If you want a convenient nasal spray that has them both in it, that's something you can buy. And so when you use that nasal spray, it's going to kill the bacteria that lives in your nose and get rid of the biofilm that the bacteria are making. So it's going to make it so that viruses don't have bacteria to sit on to stay in your nose and set up. And you're going to be, and it also helps to clear your congestion. So if you've got a sinus infection, that xylitol nasal spray can help you to be well faster, because it's going to kill the bacteria that's in there without you having to take an antibiotic. So that's a really nice thing. But it is really good for prevention as well. Cleaning your nose and cleaning your throat and cleaning your hands are the best ways to prevent the infections. There are, of course, immune-boosting things that you can do. But first, just the basic thing, even if your immune system's not the best, if you wash your hands and you clean your nose every day, a couple times a day, whether you use a nasal spray or a neti pot or a Q-tip dipped in saline and xylitol, whichever one you want to do, you're going to have a better shot at not getting sick. And then what I like to do is do your nose first and then gargle, because when you clean your nose, when you do a nasal spray, you're going to find that some of the fluid will drip to the back of your throat. And so if you then gargle, you're going to get rid of that. So cleaning your nose and gargling are extremely important. And if you're immune compromised to start with, you're going to get a leg up by doing those things. You're going to be, because you're cleaning off the table. Table's dirty, clean the table. Don't spray something in the air to make it go away. And so when I say nasal sprays, I mean things with natural ingredients in it. And so we're talking about saline and xylitol. We're talking about saline and grapefruit seed extract. There are also nasal sprays with homeopathic ingredients in them. You can get nasal sprays with some tea tree oil in it. And I'm not talking about steroid nasal sprays or antihistamine nasal sprays. Now, if you get a steroid nasal spray, so what you need to do is if you were given a nasal spray by the doctor and you're concerned about whether you should be using a steroid, you want to look up whether the compound you got was a steroid. So there are some, I won't say brand names, but I'll tell you generic names of steroid nasal sprays. They can be fluticasone. They can be, usually they're either fluticasone or mometasone. Those are the nasal sprays. I don't know if they're ever triamcinolone. That's also a steroid. But definitely fluticasone and mometasone. Those are two common inhaled corticosteroids. They can be used in nasal sprays, and they can also be used in inhalers. Like, so if you go in with a bronchitis, you might be given an inhaled steroid, and that's what those are. So you might also be given an antihistamine nasal spray. So first of all, steroids are suppressive. They're suppressive to the immune system. They don't let your immune system do what it does. They will make you feel better because they do suppress inflammation, but they are not allowing your immune system to work. Xylitol doesn't do anything to your immune system, and you don't get addicted to it. Same with saline. Same with all the antimicrobials you might use in nasal sprays. But steroids, if you use them regularly, you can get rebound inflammation. And the other thing is, because it's suppressive to your immune system, ultimately you're going to get more bacterial and microbial growth. You're more likely to get viruses, you're more likely to get bacteria, and you're more likely to get fungal infections in your nose. If you use an inhaled corticosteroid, so if you use mometasone or fluticasone in a steroid that you're going to breathe in, what do they tell you to do after you take it? They tell you to rinse your mouth out. Why do they do that? Because if you don't, it's going to suppress your immune system. It's going to suppress the probiotics that live there, and you're going to get thrush. So, and what's thrush? It's an overgrowth of candida. It's a ambient yeast that lives in our bodies, but when it overgrows, it's really nasty. It's really uncomfortable. So you don't necessarily have to do that. That's why I encourage people to come in, because we have such great stuff that can help you with your colds and coughs and things. So sometimes you've just had the cough for so long that you do have to take the antibiotics. even if you take the antibiotics, it's still a good idea to come see us, because there's, if you're going to go take an antibiotic, it's going to mess up your gut flora, and we want you taking a probiotic. So you want to make sure you're taking a probiotic. A probiotic I like for people to take while they're taking an antibiotic contains Saccharomyces boulardii in it. Saccharomyces boulardii is a probiotic yeast. So we think of probiotics being bacteria most of the time, like Lactobacillus acidophilus and Lactobacillus acidophilus and bifidobacteria. Those are bacterial probiotics. The definition of a probiotic is a microorganism that does wonderful things in your body. It lives with you in symbiosis. You give it a great place to live, and in exchange, it does great things for you. It supports your immune system. It makes acids to keep you regular. It outcompetes other bad microorganisms. So you have probiotics living in your nose, in your throat, in your lungs, any part of your body that communicates with the outside world. So your entire digestive tract, more is in your colon. That's why it's called a colon, because colonies live there. So which came first, the word colon or the word colony? I'm not sure which. But a colon is a place where you have colonies of microbes. You have tons of bacteria and microorganisms living in your colon. On your skin, in your eyes, for women in our vaginas, not for men, but in our vaginas, we definitely have probiotics. We have, you know, they are not sterile places. They have microorganisms living there. So you want to make sure that you have those. And if you take antibiotics, you're going to disrupt the natural flora that helps you to be healthy. So when you come see us and you have a cold, what do we do? The first thing we're going to tell you is go home and rest. Because if you're still at work, you're going to be sick longer. Why? Because cortisol, all right? If you're going to use cortisol, runs your fight or flight. So cortisol doesn't care if you're running away from a bear, meeting a deadline, or you have an immune insult. So if you have a cold, your cortisol rises and it pushes immune compounds to work. But if you're running away from a bear, your body's like, oh, I'm in danger. So I'm going to prioritize increasing heart rate and blood pressure and breathing so that this person can run away from the bear. And it's not going to be as available to run your immune system. So guess what? You stay sick longer. So the less you rest, the sicker, the longer you will be sick, no matter what you do. Okay? So if you get sick, if you get a cold, the place you should be in is bed. Duh. How many times do I have to tell people that? But I can't stay home. I know. A lot of people say that. They can't stay home. So if you're in a position where you have to go to work anyway, or you feel you have to go to work anyway, what you do is turn off as much of your life as you can, you know, farm things out, stay home if you can. If you absolutely can't, try to turn off other things that you're doing. And again, if you're sick, you want to continue to use the neti pot, the nasal spray, wash your hands so that you're not transmitting the infection to someone else. Most of the infections you get are not going to be the flu. Most of the viruses out there are not influenza. They're rhinoviruses, they're adenoviruses, they're parainfluenza viruses. Mostly what you're going to get is rhinoviruses. That's what's running around. And the flu virus will not protect you from those, by the way. So you can get pretty sick, and it's not the flu. Good times, right? So if you're actually sick and you're being out in the public, that's a really good time to be have the hand sanitizer, washing your hands, and cleaning your nose out and gargling regularly. If you clean your nose out, if you use a neti pot or xylitol nasal spray and you gargle, you will be sick for less time because the viruses will not be able to survive. One of the things you're doing, yes, you're killing the bacteria that the viruses are living on, but you're mechanically moving them out. And the salt... Well, salt and xylitol, to some extent, are going to go after viruses because they disrupt cell membranes. Viruses don't have cell membranes. They have basically DNA or RNA in a protein coat, and that's all they are. But if you disrupt the bacteria that they live on, they have nowhere to go, and they're just not going to be able to reproduce. They need bacteria to live on, generally, to reproduce. And so if you disrupt those, out they go. And then if you're just mechanically removing them because you're gargling them out or you're netting them out, they're just not going to be able to hang around. So when you come to see us, I have these great things that I offer people. I have these great, one of my favorite things to give are these combination capsules that contain herbs in them. They have things like echinacea, golden seal, berberines. They have, ginger, cayenne, grapefruit seed extract, and vitamins A, high doses of vitamin A. Vitamin A is a wonderful antiviral. Zinc, vitamin C, vitamin E. I have these great combinations. We have you take a lot of them, and then they can, they tend to get you out of whatever infection you have. I pair that with a cell salt, and I really like my Schüssler cell salts. Cell salts are tissue salts. There's only 12 of them, and they're kind of like homeopathic remedies. You give them in a low potency, and you give the particular remedy based on the nature of the discharge that you have. So if you have a thick green discharge, I'm going to be giving you Cali-Sulf. If you have a yellow discharge, I'm going to be giving you calc salt. If you have a clear discharge that's egg whitey, you're going to get nat mir. If it's yucky and gray, you'll get cali mir. So that's a bunch of different cells. I really enjoy pairing the cell salts with the antimicrobials. The other things that I like to use elder sometimes by itself and sometimes in combination with other things. Elder is a great antiviral, and it has been studied to prevent the flu, prevent actual influenza, and to shorten the duration of influenza. So if you're concerned about getting the flu, one thing to do is to take elder preventatively this time of year. So depending on how concentrated it is, you have to follow the instructions on the bottle, because depending what you buy, it could be more or less concentrated. And so then you follow your instructions. So you take a prophylactic dose, which will be maybe a third to a quarter of the dose you would take when you were sick. And you may help to prevent yourself from getting the flu. Now, of course, everybody asks me, should I get a flu shot? Well, I'm not going to tell you what to do. The pro of getting the flu shot is, if they get the strain right, when the flu season in Australia happened, they figured out what strains there were. And if they get the strains right, and you have the flu strain delivered to you, and it's the correct strain that's in the environment, it may prevent you getting the flu. A lot of times they don't get it right. It does happen that people get the flu shot and they get the flu anyway. That definitely does happen. Will you be protected against the flu? You might be. What I don't know are the statistics on how much flu the flu shot actually prevents. I'm not sure of that, because there are so many factors that go into whether you're going to get the flu. If you get, like I said, if you get a flu shot and you have a decently functioning immune system, you're going to make antibodies to whatever virus is in there. So you will have some antibodies to it. That doesn't give you a free pass. That doesn't mean, all right, now I'm not going to get sick.
Your mom got the flu, even though she had a flu shot last year.
I know. That's the fact. I know. Mm-hmm. And that's because they got the strain wrong. Whatever strain that she got introduced to wasn't in her vaccination, we think. Or it could also be not everybody mounts a response to the actual vaccination. They don't make antibodies at the time for whatever reason. Sometimes the thing just doesn't work. So if you want to get a flu shot, now if you're somebody who's immune compromised and there are reasons for you not to get vaccinations, you have to consult with your doctor as to whether you want to do that. But if you're concerned about whether you should get a vaccination or not, one of the things to do is to go to NVIC, NVIC.org, and there's 8 questions you're supposed to ask before you get a vaccination. And you can see what they are there. They're things like, am I currently sick? Have I had a bad reaction to a vaccination in the past? Do I have a condition where I shouldn't get vaccinations? There's 8 questions at NVIC.org that you can look at to decide if you should get a vaccination at any given time. So that can be really helpful in making that decision. If you're required to get a vaccination and you're going to get one and you're concerned about side effects, naturopathic physicians can help you with that. We have herbs, we have homeopathy that can help you with that. Not everybody's going to decide to get a flu shot or not. Like I said, it doesn't give you a free pass. Even if you get a flu shot, you should still be using your neti pot, washing your hands, gargling, cleaning your nose out, because it doesn't protect you from other viruses. And there's so many other viruses out there. Believe me, I see them. They walk in every day. So you want to still be using and protect yourself like you're going to get the flu. That is, love your elder. Take that elder. Mm. You should respect
your
elders.
You should always love your elders.
Respect your elders.
Anyway.
Yeah, right. I know. But your elder syrup is a really handy thing. It's a really good idea to take some of that most of the time. So those are some caveats. So what if you come in and you have a cough? Same things. If you have discharges, whether it's a cough or a sinusitis, and you have a colored discharge, I'm going to treat it pretty much the same way. I'm going to give you one of those antimicrobial combinations that have herbs and vitamins in it and a cell salt. And then we might give you more specific herbs to help with coughs. We have cough syrups too, and there are lovely herbs that can help with coughs, things like your bisanta, your elder, cherry, grindelia, hyssop, licorice is another one, hops, poplar bud. There's many herbs that help with coughs. Also, another thing that helps with coughs is honey. So honey can be really helpful. If you take Manuka honey is honey from New Zealand. Manuka honey is full of immune compounds, and that's something you can consume. But if you get just good raw local honey, it will help you with immunity as well. And it literally helps with coughs. And there have been studies on children where they give honey versus a cough syrup, and they find that the honey works better. Now, if you have mucus that you want to break up, then think about guaifenesin. So guaifenesin is the active ingredient in Mucinex. I just caution you, if you're going to go get Mucinex, you want to stay away from Mucinex that has any modifier after it. So if the D is going to be a suppressive decongestant, and the same with Robitussin. If you get Robitussin, it is guaifenesin. So if you're going to get those things, it's a good idea to get the plain ones that just have guaifenesin in them. Guaifenesin is a natural compound that comes from guaiacum bark, and it breaks up mucus. Hmm. Yes.
Wow.
And so that's in Mucinex, and it's also in Robitussin. So if you get Robitussin DM, it has dextromethorphan in it. Dextromethorphan is an opioid.
Ooh.
An over-the-counter opioid.
Well, that's not good.
It's a cough suppressant. Mm-hmm. That's why it's in there. If you get, Robitussin CF, then it's going to be cold and flu, and it's going to have pseudoephedrine or some other kind of decongestant
right.
in it.
Right.
So why is it not great to take a decongestant?
Yeah.
Or a suppressive decongestant, because... Mm-hmm. They give you what's called a sympathomimetic. So it's something that mimics your fight or flight. So it dries up your secretions. When you dry up your secretions completely, instead of, using water to get them out of there and moisturizing, when you dry up your secretions completely, mucous membranes can get irritated more readily. Once they get irritated, guess what? It's a great place for bacteria and viruses to hang out.
Oh, good.
If you use a decongestant like that, like your pseudoephedrine or your sympathomimetics that dry you up, your pseudoephedrine, your phenylephrine or your synephrine, those kinds of things, then you might be sick longer. You won't be as congested, but you'll be sick longer.
Will it also slow down the draining process?
Yeah.
Basically by doing
Well, it kind of does, but it takes out the secretions. So you'll still have the virus, but you won't have anything to carry it out.
Right.
So you're much better off thinning the mucus so you have mucus so it can come out, and then keep flushing, drinking lots of water, eating soup, irrigating with your nose and gargling with your throat. And just keeping things moving, that's much better for you. It's much better for your mucous membranes to be moist than it is for them to be dry. And you want to flush them out. So if you drink lots of water, you'll thin the mucus. If you take, Mucinex or anything with guaifenesin in it, it will thin the mucus. If you take herbs aren't suppressive. They're supportive. You can also take herbs that are mucilaginous, and though they have a plant goo in them called mucilage, so they're very soothing to your respiratory tract. So those are helpful as well. But if you take something suppressive, like I said, whether it's a steroid or whether it's a sympathomimetic, you can be sick longer. The other thing about sympathomimetics, your pseudoephedrines and your phenylephrines and things like that, is they have anticholinergic side effects. So do antihistamines. So the anticholinergic side effects, they block, they they block secretions. That's why that's one of the ways that they work. So when things that are anticholinergic, so acetylcholine is a very important neurotransmitter, and it's part of your autonomic nervous system. So when you take something that has anticholinergic effects, you're going to dry up. But the other thing is that, guess what uses acetylcholine in your brain? The place where you remember stuff. And when you have reduced cholinergic activity in your brain, if it's reduced enough and you have enough neuronal degeneration, you get cognitive deficits. And that's one of the mechanisms for Alzheimer's disease. Mm. So if you take enough sympathomimetic or antihistamine, you can get cognitive deficits.
Oh, that's really weird.
Yeah, I know, right?
So now, obviously, there's been studies on this. If you have someone who's got Alzheimer's disease, would they not have... Maybe they took a lot of this?
Oh, I don't know that it causes Alzheimer's disease.
Oh, I thought
it's
that's
just
what
you said. It's just that it causes cognitive deficits,
cognitive deficits.
Is the same it's the same mechanism. It's the same nerves that are affected in Alzheimer's disease.
Oh,
I don't know that there's a direct correlation between how much antihistamine or decongestant you took and Alzheimer's. I don't think that's how that works.
Oh, okay.
That you have to have a genetic predisposition to
just
Alzheimer's
checking.
And environmental, and then you have to look in the brain and see the specific cellular makeup of Alzheimer's. But it can cause cognitive deficits that are not necessarily Alzheimer's, just because if you block the neurotransmitter, the nerves just aren't going to work.
Huh.
Yeah, but it's not specifically Alzheimer's is something specific.
Is that permanent or is that a temporary thing?
That's a good question. I would say that if you are doing it acutely, it's probably reversible. But the longer, like if you, but some people take antihistamines all the time.
I know,
and
that's why I'm
asking. Take decongestants all the time.
Yeah.
So is it reversible? I don't know the answer to that.
Huh.
It certainly is going to slow down the functioning of those nerves, but is there actually neurodegeneration? That I'm not sure of.
Okay, all you UConn students are looking for a nice little thesis to work on. Here you go.
Yeah. Well, that information may be out there. I just don't know if it's permanent or not.
It's just interesting.
Yeah. So, there's a lot of things that naturopathic physicians can do for you to help you with your colds and flu. And one of them, so we've talked about a lot of different things. You want to eat lightly. You want to stay away from sugar. Eat your chicken soup if you are not a vegetarian. If you are a vegetarian, just eat your big old vegetable soup. That's going to have a lot of nice antioxidants in it. It's going to help you with your healing. If you're vegetarian, then throw mushrooms. Well, you don't have, even if you're not a vegetarian. But if you're vegetarian, you're not going to get the chicken. So chicken is going to have immune globulins in it. And if you do bone broth, you're going to get stem cells and you're going to get all kinds of nice things to protect your mucous membranes. And you also get the immune globulins to help you with your immune system. If you're vegetarian, you're not going to do the chicken part. But you can take advantage of a lot of nice things that can help you. So if you do greens and carrots, you're going to get your carotenoids. Onions and garlic are antimicrobial. And then mushrooms. Mushrooms, especially if they're cooked, have lovely immune compounds in them. So if you're a vegetarian, you can make a big old vegetable soup with a lot of mushrooms in it. It's going to help you. And what kind of mushrooms? Maitake and shiitake and reishi are great, but so are good old button mushrooms. Yeah, whatever. So basically use whatever mushroom you like. But maitake and reishi and shiitake are known to have great immune properties. The cool thing about maitake, also known as hen of the woods, it grows around here on campus.
Like all over the place.
Yes, yeah. Just make sure you know if you're going to take
better
it.
Know
just,
what you're doing.
Exactly.
All, right?
but I thought it was an exotic Japanese mushroom, and it is. But I had no idea that it grew in my backyard. And then one day I found it.
Yeah, it's all over the place.
All over the place.
Especially if we have a really moist, summer.
Right. It's a wonderful immune compound. It can fight cancer. It's great. Yeah. You can make, tinctures out of maitake and or just eat it. Just put it in your soup. If you know what you're looking for, it's wonderful stuff. So those are some some things you can do. Don't forget the wet sock treatment when you're on your way to bed. Make sure your feet are nice and warm. If they're not, you need to warm them up with a hot foot bath or over the heater or with some warm socks. And then take some thin cotton socks, wring them out in cold water, put them on your feet, and then put warm wool socks over top of that and go to bed in your warm jammies, and it'll draw congestion downward and out of your head. The other thing that can make you sick is this time of year, you first turned the heat on, and if you didn't clean the ducts, there's probably some dust and mold that are blowing out of the ducts. The other thing that happens is all of a sudden it gets cold and you're grabbing your jackets and your sweatshirts, things that have been lying around for, you know, since April, and they may be covered in dust. So be aware of that. It might be a good idea that before you wear a sweatshirt, throw it in the wash before you even wear it. I always do that and then if you don't do that and you've grabbed the sweatshirt, you might decide, hey, this is the first time I'm wearing this season. Wear it once and then throw it in the wash. It's just that you're going to have more dust around. Anything that gives you more congestion is going to give a track for the viruses to get into your system. So dust and mold will make you more likely to get sick. And there's a lot of dust and mold right now because we have a lot of moisture. We have a lot of dampness. And we haven't had any hard freezes yet. And hard freezes do a lot to beat back the mold. I find that once it freezes, then, you know, the moisture freezes out of the air, so it can't hold the mold as much. But mold is chronically irritating to your immune system because your immune system doesn't quite know what to do with it. So it's this constant low-grade irritation. That's why the neti pot, the xylitol, gargle, those are all really good things to do. And the other thing is to de-dust and moldify your house.
Is that a technical term?
Yeah. HEPA filters, HEPA filters, ionizers, things to get the particles out of the air. Declutter. I mean, easier said than done, but declutter your house because makes your house easier to clean.
Yeah.
When you declutter. I did a major decluttering this weekend. Yeah.
You did. Well, I think your guest 2 weeks ago, Sue Cody, was part of that. Isn't she a decluttering specialist?
Yes. It wasn't. Maybe she inspired me.
Maybe she inspired you. Maybe that was it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, she gave us some good ideas. It was very nice.
Mm.
So that's important to do, too. So those are some things that are important around... I was going to talk about some other things, but I thought that was really important that I should talk about that.
And touching on that flu thing, you know, a lot of people die from the flu.
Yeah.
It's kind of amazing. That last year, it was a huge year last year. Big
right?
year.
Record you have some numbers. Stats?
I have some stats, which is a little frightening, but it's close to 80,000 people that died from the flu last year in the U.S., and when you take those statistics versus the statistics that I know about, you know, cycling and pedestrian deaths of at half that number, that's kind of amazing. I mean, it's really, it's safer to ride your bike than it is to get the flu.
Wow.
It's just interesting. It's the worst it's been in a decade. The last time it had been that bad was 2009 when the swine flu was around.
Yeah. Are there any demographics on the people that died?
I was looking for that, and I'm not seeming to pull that up, but there's apparently elderly people and young children are the most susceptible. And then those, of course, that have other issues that make them, you know, more susceptible to having problems. But, I'm looking to see if there's anything... the unusual twist, those aged 50 to 64 rather than infants at the age. So as typical, it says people over 65 are most likely to be hospitalized. But in the unusual twist, those aged 50 to 64 rather than infants are the age cohort right behind the elderly. So baby boomers have higher hospitalization rates than their grandchildren right now.
Wow, that's very interesting. I wonder what's up with that.
I have a good clue as to what's up with that.
What's up with that?
Well, I think, and this is just my opinion, and it's not necessarily, you know, fact, but I think that there's a lot of baby boomers that have not taken care of themselves for a very long time.
Right.
I don't think that the baby boomer generation is the healthiest generation out there by any means.
Right.
And that would be my, you know, that would be my outlook on it.
That it's one of those first generations that had the benefit of fast food, processed food. They're
Absolutely.
Not necessarily, and they came up through their adulthood not exercising and not eating their leafy greens. And
guess what year the Golden Arches were formed? And we all know what the Golden Arches are. Are you ready?
Yeah.
The year I was born.
55.
You got it.
Oh.
So if you take a look at that, and I'm kind of like right in the middle of the baby boomer demographic.
Yeah.
You're kind of on the end of it.
Yeah.
But if you look at that, then that was the beginning of the fast food frenzy.
Yes.
Which, you know, shortly after that, you had Burger King and all these other places pop up. The Roy Rogers, the Wendy's, the, you know, all these like just...
Fast food.
Yeah.
Yes, fast food establishments.
Fast food establishments.
Yes.
And then you look at now those folks are more susceptible to the flu. Isn't that interesting?
Yes. Well,
more
susceptible
to death by flu.
Yeah. So it's I just wonder, are you going to be more susceptible? That's what I would like to know about these people. How do they eat? How do they live? Do they get their exercise? I can tell you most people don't exercise enough to make a difference in their health. The majority of people in this country are not exercising enough to make a difference in their health.
Right.
And the majority of people are overweight. You know, millions of people are obese. About a third of the country is obese. And most of the country is overweight. So,
right. So what we're looking at is we're looking at severely compromised bodies.
Yeah.
Basically.
Or, and, I don't know about severely, but bodies that people who are not... you know, that when I ask them how many days a week they eat vegetables, the number is not seven. And the number, you're lucky if the number is three or four.
Right.
Right. So people will have a meal and they won't necessarily include vegetables in their meal. Like for you and me, when we eat our meals, vegetables are the main course.
Right.
That's the feature.
And then the protein surrounds it. In some way, or is part of it.
Part of it, but the main thing is vegetables. When we when we have saag paneer, it's mostly saag.
Right.
When we have our salad and protein, it's mostly salad.
Right.
You know, and that's how we eat. You know, vegetables and produce feature in our meals, and a lot of people it's something quick. It's something that's mostly a starch, like a big starchy meal, and the vegetables are a garnish, and it's supposed to be the other way around.
Right.
So and
you know, I'll just put it out there, if you're a red meat eater and you've cooked yourself a nice steak, you're supposed to let it settle for 7 or 8 minutes before you cut into it anyway.
Yeah.
So you can eat your salad during that time.
Yeah. And you don't eat a lot of it either. You don't
I eat a very small portion whenever I eat and the same thing, you know, even when we have fish or chicken or anything, we have we don't have enormous portions.
No. And I can't eat enormous portions of protein. It just doesn't work for me.
Right.
You know, so you don't need a ton of protein. You're gonna have your protein needs are gonna be higher if you're an athlete. But we're athletes and we do pretty well with our protein. But if your meal looks like a big slab of steak and a bunch of potatoes and homeopathic vegetables, you got to work on that. So in the meantime, I had a little blurb here. I'm trying to have a feature, why food X is good for you. This week's food is why leafy greens are good for you. Leafy green vegetables are awesome. They have so much nutrition in them. Leafy greens in general have lots of carotenoids in them. So you know, in the fall when the leaves are changing color and they no longer look green, that's because in the fall trees shed their leaves, and what happens is the tree decides it's going to go dormant over the winter, and it knows that it's time to do that by a combination of the cold and the change, and it can tell the day length. When it sees the day length is shortening, then what it does is it cuts off the food supply to the leaf, so the leaf where it attaches to the tree curls in, and it doesn't attach to the tree as well. So for a while, it just loses its connection to the tree, so now it can't do photosynthesis. So what you see underneath is the color the leaf actually is, whatever the color of its carotenoids, and that's why you see the different colors. They're carotenoids. They're orange and yellow and red. Those are carotenoids. So when you eat kale, if you would leave kale, like if you would ignore your kale for a while, you'll see that it turns yellow. And the yellow in the kale is a carotenoid. And in fact, there's lutein in kale. So kale's really good for your eyes. So all of those leafy greens have wonderful carotenoids in them. So here's some stuff about particular vitamins. Kale has tons of vitamin K in it. So if you're on Coumadin, you have to be careful about eating kale unless you're INR has gone up and you need to coagulate more, then kale's a good way to bring it down. So has a lot of vitamin A in the form of the carotenoids. And it's got lutein and beta carotene, great for oxidative stress. And if you can find ways to eat it raw, you'll get some nutritional benefit from it. And I like to make kale. Kale's one of the things I like to make a massage salad out of. It's hard to get it to calm down because it's a really rough vegetable. But if you get more of a baby kale, or if you really take the time to massage it, so you put in olive oil and a bit of good quality salt, and then you massage it for a long time, take out the stems, and you massage it, you can break down those cell walls and make it so that you can eat it raw. But you can also steam it. You can put it in a stir fry, and that makes the carotenoids more bioavailable. Microgreens are a new thing. They're immature greens produced from seeds. And they, so it's basically you grow the greens from a seed and you only let them grow to maybe a half an inch or an inch and you eat those. And they're really good. And they have a lot of nutrients because they're in a very tiny form. So they're in a major growth phase. So they actually have more nutrients in them. So if you eat a lot of microgreens, that's a really good way to get some more vitamins. Vitamin C, E, and K are high in microgreens. And they can be grown. You can grow them indoors all year if you want to. Broccoli rocks. It's a cruciferous vegetable, part of the cabbage family. It's got a lot of nutrients. It's got a lot of vitamin C and K. It's got fiber and calcium, folate and phosphorus. It also has sulforaphanes in it, which is a great anti-cancer compound and also improves your bacterial gut flora. We don't eat enough broccoli. We should eat more broccoli.
We eat a lot. But you're right. We could eat more.
We don't eat broccoli because we eat it more in the winter because we do more stir fries.
Right. That's when I eat it. Yeah.
I don't like raw broccoli, but right. I would do a broccoli slaw. I should do that. Yeah. So then collards. Collards are wicked nutritious. They're really big. They can be bitter, but there are great ways to saute them and cook them. They're really good for vitamin K. So there, if you have blood clotting, if you have your blood is too thin, or you have low platelets, collards are your friends. When you consume more collards, I guess there's some K2 in it as well. You reduce your risk of hip fractures when you eat collards. Spinach is really fantastic too. Our favorite thing, like we've told you before, is our saag paneer. We like to eat our Indian, where you puree. Basically, it's pureed spinach. And when you puree spinach like that, you're going to get inside the cell walls. You're going to get a lot of nutrients. It's really good for you. There's a lot of folate in spinach, so it can help you that way. And then cabbage itself. Cabbage is in the cabbage family, in case you didn't know. And it's got glucosinolates, which makes them taste kind of bitter, and they have wonderful cancer protective properties. So if you eat sauerkraut, a homemade sauerkraut, it can help to protect you from lung and esophageal cancer. So if your doctor has told you of Barrett's esophagus, bring on the sauerkraut. Barrett's esophagus is a change in the cells in your esophagus from reflux that is a precancerous condition. Beet greens, they are really, really nutritious. And they have a lot of different, they have beta carotene. They also have lutein in them, like your kale. Watercress, I love watercress. It's really high in calcium. It's really good for you if you trying to increase your calcium and you're concerned about your bone density. Also, watercress has shown that it targets cancer stem cells, so it can help to protect you against cancer and help to slow down cancer if you already have it. Romaine lettuce is very nice. It's not a cruciferous vegetable. It's a lettuce. It's got a lot of A and vitamin K, and it's got a lot of water in it, so it's going to help you to be hydrated. And then Swiss chard. Another one that I love to make massage salad out of. It's great for your A, C, and K. It's got syringic acid, which helps to lower blood sugar. So if you have blood sugar issues, chard is a good green to eat. So it can be really, you can put it in your soup, you can put it in your stew, and you can make your massage salad that I just explained. Arugula is my friend. I love arugula. It's nice and spicy. Other people call it rocket, colewort, roquette, rucola, and rucoli. It's got a peppery taste. I love to eat it straight. I'll just sit happily munch on it, but it is pretty intense tasting. And it has dietary nitrates that turn into nitric oxide, which can lower your blood pressure and keep your blood vessels working the way that they should. Endive is from the chicory family. It's hard to grow. It's curly, and it does have a lot of nutrition as well. And it has camphorol, which is a great antioxidant that's anti-inflammatory. And then bok choy, one of my favorite things to put in a stir fry, has a bunch of selenium in it, which is going to help you with your thyroid function and help you with your prostate health. And then turnip greens. Turnip greens are good. They're acidic. They're almost citrusy tasting. I love turnip greens. And you can cook them, I like to eat them raw because I like they have a lot of oxalic acid in them. And so they can help reduce your risk of cancer, heart disease. They reduce inflammation. So eat your leafy greens. They're really good for you, any which way you're going to eat them. So having said that, I have to go. So thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath. This is a call and talk show about health and natural medicine. I'm Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician with my co-host Ron Meniza. You can also email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Doors.